Everything you need to know about high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse. The Rudin Report presents Bats and Sticks with Dave Rudin. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Bats and Sticks. I'm Dave Rudin. We have a great show for you today as we do a baseball and boys lacrosse. Going to be the themes. Joining us in a little bit is going to be Ken Gariak of the Fairfield Ludlow baseball team, defending FCAC champion and off to a great start. Unbelievable pitching so far, a team ERA of 1.7, so we have a lot to talk about with Ken. And then I wish I could say I had the great foresight in scheduling my other guest. It was pure dumb luck. I talked to Darian, lacrosse coach, or texted Jeff Braymeyer. Asked him to come on the show, figured there was a lot to talk about. And then last night I'm looking on social media and he's celebrating his 700th career win. Absolutely incredible accomplishment. And to show you how old I am, I know Jeff before there was, he was the lacrosse coach, so I'm an old guy. But Jeff's going to join us for a far-ranging interview, but we're going to start off with baseball. And joining me as always, Sean Ratchford. Sean, how you doing?
Doing very well. A little cold and rainy, but we had a great week of baseball.
We certainly did, and we finished up non-league play, and then Friday was the opening of the conference season. And we'll bounce around and talk about a few teams, but we have six teams right now with one loss. That's going to shake out a bunch because we're going to have a lot of them playing each other starting this week, starting tomorrow with Fairfield Ward playing Trumbull. And these records were compiled against non-league competition. Sean, when you were coaching over at Danbury, is it different? Do you look at closing the book on the non-league schedule and things change once you get into conference play?
100%. You look at baseball season. At the end of this week, most teams are going to be halfway. Or just before halfway with their season. So the season flies by quickly. The thing that you're going to get at the end of this week, though, is you're going to start to see things happen in the FCAC. As you said, the out-of-season conference is wonderful. It allows kids to be exposed. It hopefully helps you get all-state ballots for kids when you get to play other towns. But now comes the grind of playing good baseball day in, day out against real good teams. So it's exciting.
And we're going to start, as I said, they're all going to start playing each other. Some of these one-loss teams could have three losses by the end of the week. Let's talk about a few of them. And the team that sort of jumped out to me first of the 5-1 teams is Norwalk. And they jumped out because their top two pitchers have not pitched. Jackson Irmo out for the year with the torn ACL during basketball season, and Gavin Shaker, their ace, has not pitched yet. You know, there was a lot of preseason talk about him being injured. I texted with Ryan Mitchell yesterday. He said it's a bone bruise and hope to have him back, and he's got major league aspirations, so you're going to err on the side of caution with something like that. Regardless, you have your top two pitchers, and you get off to a 5-1 start. That's quite impressive.
It's a testament to the team. It's a testament to the coaches. Again, sometimes when you lose your big players, it tears the team's heart out. It speaks to the resiliency of the players. Obviously, Irmo's there as a leader, which helps. So he's at the games. He's still able to bring his presence. And Shaker, he'll bounce back. Again, a kid who has a future. Do I want to win high school games? Yep, but I'd rather pick up the paper and see that he's played for a college team and done well, and then, oh, my God, he's been drafted. So you're going to err on the side of caution as far as that. But they have a good team. They have a solid team. They compete hard. You know, again, a testament to the coaches and the team itself.
How hard is that as a high school coach when you have a player who – either has big time or not even big time, but college aspirations. And you know, on the instances where you have somebody who maybe even could get drafted, How hard is that in terms of navigating, wanting to win with your high school team and not wanting to hurt somebody's future?
Again, the difference between being a young coach, which I was, and it was all about the wins. We win. Oh, I'm a great coach. We lose. Oh, I'm a bad coach. To growing up as a coach and realizing it's about development. It's about what's best for those kids in the long run. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the 20 games. God, do I want to win those 20 games? But you want to develop this young man as a person. You want to develop him as a player so that he can go on and compete. Because when he goes to college, every player in that team is going to be a Iowa Player of the Year, a, you know, North Carolina Player of the Year. So you got to have the grit. You got to have the mentality as this is exciting as opposed to, oh, no, coach, I'm going against great players. Yeah, that's the deal. As you go up, the funnel gets smaller and the players get better. The skills get better. Your job is to try to slow the game down.
Marcus Villafane and Dylan Izzy have been the two aces so far. Team ERA for the Bears, 2.8. We'll see where Norwalk stands when we're talking about him next week, because they play defending Class M champion St. Joseph tomorrow, and then Wednesday they go to play Fairfield Ludlow. So that kind of that's life in the FCAC. And talking about Ludlow, and we'll be talking to Ken Gariak in a little bit, talking about pitching, outstanding performances so far by Reed Stanton, Tyler Gariak, and Elliot Kwan. They have a team ERA, as I mentioned before, of 1.7. And the other thing to me that's really impressive is they've played six games, and they've only needed to get four innings out of their relievers. So it goes to show you how well the pitchers are pitching, and also how tout they've been in terms of with their pitch counts and being able to go the distance because they're not throwing a lot of pitches.
Yeah, they're attacking hitters. That's a great thing. And that, as a coach, is a dream come true. When you can hand the ball to somebody and they can go out and give you five or six innings, they can give you seven innings with the pitch count and everything. I love it. He's got a statement, attitude is everything, on his website. And I want to speak to him when he's on about that, because I think that's an attitude. I think that's a mindset that they as coaches have taught. And I'm, you know, I can't wait to talk to him about that.
It's kind of an interesting dynamic. And you've probably been, I'm sure you've been in this situation before. They win the FCAC out of the number seven spot. And we have a lot of precedents, probably more so in baseball than any other sport, of a 4-8 seed winning the FCAC championship, and that's where having one or two good pitchers makes such a difference. But you go from playing out of the seven seed where people aren't looking at you, you don't have the spotlight on you like some of the top teams, the higher seeds do, and then you come back the next year and all of a sudden you're a favorite.
Yeah, and I also, that's a question I want to ask him. I think as a coach, Dave, within the league, the longer you're there, do you want to be a 1 or 2 seed? You do. You'd like to play a home game. But you realize, man, no matter who you play, you're going to play someone. They're going to be throwing their ace. And again, any day in baseball, somebody's ace can outpitch your ace. So 1-8, I just want to get in. Give me one of those 8 spots, and I'm happy as heck.
Yeah, you have a lot of coaches who would put their players up right now for MVP to date. I don't know who's had a better start than Reed Stanton. In 14 innings, he has not allowed an earned run. He has a strikeout-to-walk ratio of 21-1. And just to show he's a kind of a balanced player, he's tied for the team lead with 8 RBIs.
Again, a great thing about high school baseball. You can pitch and you can play the field. Sometimes it becomes a really, really hard choice for a kid that goes on to college. Look at Kasperius when he left and went to North Carolina. Do I pitch? Do I want to play the field? Ends up going to UConn and things worked out, but it's hard. So that's cool.
And bouncing around a little bit, and we've talked about this team a lot, and they're the poster child of what we've talked about, how things change so quickly and how this season is a sprint and not a marathon. But Fairfield Ward, season opening loss to Lyman Hall, and they have run five straight wins since then. Friday, 6-3 win over St. Joseph. They beat Amity. Amity actually is struggling this year. The FCAC teams have had their way with them so far. Very atypical, but they handed Norwalk its only loss. They've beaten Brookfield. They've beaten Staples. And then they have to come back and play Trumbull in tomorrow. That's a murderous schedule. To go on that kind of streak just shows the overall talent that Fairfield Ward has that we've talked about.
Yeah, as you attested to many times, FCAC baseball. Every day you're going to wake up, it's going to be someone good. You have to turn the page after a day off, and the next team's coming to you or you're going to them. So that's the great part of coaching in the league. That's the great part of the FCAC baseball. That's the hardest thing. Can you get your players ready for 20 games? Can you get them ready to compete? You know, expectations. Sometimes kids read the paper. Sometimes they listen to the internet and, oh, we're going to have an easy one here. It doesn't always happen.
I like when they read the paper. We probably have a different feeling on that. Or look at the websites. More accurately, look at the websites, I should say. How difficult, again, is, and yeah, I maybe this is just straight out obvious, but in the way baseball, and there are no easy games in the FCAC anymore. You probably have one or two teams that you should beat, but there used to be maybe five or six teams. But when you have kind of the weeks that all these FCAC teams that have one loss, and they're going to play two other teams with one loss, sometimes three other teams. You could go from having one loss to having four losses in 5 days. How do you handle that? What do you say to your players, and what do you say to them if you've lost two games and you're going into Friday and trying to keep from getting swept for the week?
That's where your short-term goals and your long-term goals come in. Your long-term goal is, hey, we want to be one of those eight teams. We want to get in the tournament. We want to win 10 games, 8 games to get into the States. My goal was always to try to win 13 so you could have a chance at a home game in the States. I felt that was important for the players and for the team. So you got to get them to look forward. You do not want them mired in what happened. You want to think about what may happen, what can happen when you get on that bus or when somebody gets off a bus and comes down the hill to play you.
And then we're looking at Trumbull, which is actually has to make up a game. They're 4-1, and they have to complete a game from last week that ended up in a 4-4 tie with Notre Dame, so that needs to be made up. But another team that's good every year and certainly off to a good start this year. And again, strong pitching has been a big key for the Eagles, and they've got a 2.6 ERA. I mean, these numbers are just kind of crazy. And Trevor Shelke, their ace, has only thrown 6 innings so far.
Yeah, and you'll see as the weather gets a little warmer, the bats start to catch up. You'll find out who the real pitchers are versus who the throwers are. At the beginning of the year, sometimes a pitcher can throw the ball by. But in the FCAC, as time goes on, you're going to find out if a kid can pitch because it's a fastball hitting league. It's a high fastball hitting league. So can he mix in another pitch? Can he keep a team off balance? Again, that's why I love week 2 and week 3 of the FCAC, because now you start to ferret out, okay, where are we going to be? Who's going to be the team that really is going to challenge us?
And then we talked about this team some as a possible sleeper. Stanford's off to a 5-1 start. Maybe not quite the strength of schedule as some of the other teams, but you're beating teams that you want to beat. You're winning 50-50 games, and they have to be happy with that kind of start. And they're going to have a crazy stretch. We'll find out a lot about them over the second half of the season, because their last 5 games, they've got to play Ludlow, Ward, Norwalk, and St. Joseph. But When you have a team that's a sleeper and you get off to that kind of a start, you know, that's got to be the best medicine for your players, because you boost their confidence early on.
5-1 is 5-1, and the kids start to buy into what you're selling. And again, they've done a great job of getting the kids to play hard, getting the kids to know what they have to do, and competing for the whole 21 outs. So as you said, because you were the person when you actually invited me to come in and do the show, you saw them as a sleeper. So obviously they'd done something as coaches, or they'd done something as a program that allowed you to see some of those glimpses last year. So I'm happy as heck for them. It's a rich baseball town. They have great baseball pedigree in the past. So kudos to the coaches. Kudos to Stanford High on being a good team again.
Well, 5-1 is 5-1, and Ludlow is 5-1. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Falcons coach Ken Gariak. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on WICC.
The Rudin Report Live presents Bats and Sticks, a look at Connecticut high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse with Dave Rudin on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Bats and Sticks is brought to you by Duchess Restaurants, fresh food served fast. We've been talking about the Falcons, and nobody knows them better than their coach, Ken Gariak, and he joins us right now. Ken, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. I got to ask, I look at those pitching numbers. Is it true you set up a recliner in the dugout so you can be a little bit more comfortable, put your feet up, and just sit back there and watch your three aces go to work?
I wish I could just sit back and watch, but those guys are great. I mean, listen, I'm pretty lucky to have three guys who can, throw strikes, get guys out, compete every time they're out there, live in the moment. They're a good trio. They're pretty good. I'm pretty lucky to have them.
Is there any? I don't know that anybody's had a better start than Reed Stanton. I mean, bat and arm, but what's made him so effective as a pitcher?
He's been great. He's been throwing strikes. I mean, last time out, no walks. He's just filling the strike zone. I think he threw like 85% strikes in the last game. That's what we tell our guys. We throw strikes, we're going to be able to compete. So, I mean, he's been fantastic. He's had two great games. He's got a, great fastball, great slider, good composure, and, just fills the zone up. So he's doing a great job. He's a good kid.
You know Tyler Gariak a little bit about he came on really second half of the season last year and played a big role. Everybody plays a big role, but he really stood out too in your run to the FCAC championship, and he's picked up where he left off.
Yeah, he's been great. He's last year. He was sophomore, young, and he had one bad outing last year against St. Joe's, and then in the semifinals, he was able to redeem himself and pitch great against them. And he's been fantastic. He wants to compete. He wants to be out there. He brings a little something different than the other guys. He throws, a few more pitches, and he's good. He's a good little player, and I'm fortunate to have him. It's fun to watch him pitch out there.
Let's get into a little coach talk here. Sean, jump on in, and I'll sit and listen for a little bit.
How you doing, Coach? Coach, number one, congratulations on the FCAC last year. Great job.
Thank you very much.
I'm looking at your website, and you talk about attitude is everything. And you just mentioned live in the moment. And one of the things I used to tell our coaches and players is, guys, they're going to compete for all 21 outs. They're going to turn the page on mistakes. They're not going to take bad at-bats to the field. They're not going to, let a mistake bother the next play they have to make. How do you, as a coach, embrace that? How do you, as a teacher, foster that in your players?
Yeah, I mean, we tell the guys, listen, always be there for each other, pick each other up, work as a team. You're going to make mistakes. Baseball is a game of failure, so, you're going to have times where you're not doing well, but then there's that moment where you can do well. You come up in a big spot and something great happens. We had that last year. Ian Moore came up big spot against Warden, hit a great, ball down the line, and it was just a great moment. We play at Kiwanis, and everybody knows Kiwanis is a tough place to play. The ball, you never know where it's going to go. So we tell the guys, listen, don't focus on a mistake because it's going to happen. Just worry about trying to get the next play. And just having a good attitude about it. Guys trying to go out there and just compete and help each other out. And, hopefully they listen to some of the words that our coaching staff says, and and they, you know, they go out there and do a good job.
Well, they have, absolutely. Second thing that, you know, Dave alluded to earlier, you were last year you were a lower seed in the FSAC. This year you're one of the preseason favorites. How do you teach, because obviously you have at 5-1, how do you teach your coaches, your team, and just expectations of now we're supposed to be the guys? We're hunted as opposed to being the hunter.
Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, listen, we take it, you know, five games at a time. You know, there's four quarters to the regular season. We try to take the first five games, see where we are, talk to the kids, you know, let them know kind of what we see, what's going on, try to get their feedback. You know, it's a two-way street. You can't just be the coaches talking to them. We have to listen to them as well, and they do a pretty good job of talking to us about it. And then, you know, we take it five games at a time. You know, we can only play one at a time, but we put in little groups of five and, you know, try to do, you know, 3-2, 4-1 if we can in those five games and, you know, go from there. But, you know, it's really just a – it's really a compliment to the kids how hard they work. You know, they get out there every day. They're ready to go. You know, practice starts at 3 o'clock, and they're out there stretching and throwing before 3 o'clock, and they're getting ready to go. That way when we get there at 3 o'clock, we can hit the ground running. And whether it's infield work, base running, you know, hitting, whatever we're doing, they're ready to go. So it's really a testament to them putting in all the work.
And again, to me, all the things you and I are talking about are mindset things, things that you have planted, seeds you've planted, same as pitching. I used to tell my team, hey, guys, they're going to go after the strike zone. You're not going to walk. I remember, I think, in the 3 or 4 years I played you, we're lucky if we had two walks in all three games. Good or bad, you're going to attack the strike zone.
Yeah, that's big. We emphasize that with our pitchers all the time. Coach Love, our pitching coach, he's always talking to them, just compete, you know, get after it. Throw strikes, you know, he always wants to get ahead in the count. And, you know, the kids have answered that. And, you know, and Elliot and Tyler and Reed have all been doing that. I mean, Elliot's been doing it for, you know, a couple of years now. Tyler's been doing it for a couple of years. You know, and Reed, we didn't know what we were going to get. We knew we'd get a good pitcher. We just didn't know how well he was going to do. And he's been, you know, great throwing strikes and not walking anybody, you know, competing with every batter. So that's really huge for us. You know, as long as the guys throw strikes, we know we got an opportunity. So it's, you know, it's about competing and throwing strikes, really. That's the biggest part of the game, especially in high school baseball.
100% agree. 100%. And you make plays. And one of the things I notice is you tend to score in the first inning, which I'm a huge believer, and you tend to also score in your last at bat. Those are tremendous things. Those have put pressure on other teams. So, again, kudos to you and the staff on that.
Yeah, we try to put a little pressure on another team if we can. If we can get some runs early on, it kind of gets everybody to relax a little bit. And then at the end of the game, you know, we're never complacent. We want to make sure that we're always, you know, battling to get more runs. And at the end of the game, you know, we're just guys that are like, you know, we don't want to make the last out. You know, the guy never wants to make the last out. So, you know, when they have an opportunity to get up there and get a big hit or, you know, keep the inning going, you know, that's just the mindset right there. You know, we're trying to get up to the plate and, you know, hit, you know, line drives, ground balls, you know, and just, you know, make the other team work for it. You know, we want to make sure that, you know, we're putting our best bat on the ball.
So I love it. Attitude is everything. It's not just words. It's action. So that's a great job by you and your staff.
I appreciate it, Coach.
Hey, Ken, how much fun was Friday Stanton against Ryan Johnson of Greenwich, two high-level college commits? The game was hyped up because of the pitching duel, and you come out on the plus side of a 2-1 game. First of all, that's what everybody who plays and coaches baseball lives for, is that kind of a game, especially when you win it.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, Adrian's a great guy. I mean, we love playing Greenwich. I mean, those guys are always, you know, always competitive. And, yeah, I mean, Johnson was great. He was fantastic for their game. I mean, he kept us in check for the most part. We hit some balls. They made a couple of mistakes. We made a couple of mistakes, and we were able to capitalize on a couple of those. Reed, you know, got in a couple situations where we had a couple guys in scoring position, and he just, you know, buckled down. He was able to get a couple guys out. We made some plays in the field. You know, it was a great game to watch. It was fun because we both had, you know, we had to use pinch hitters in spots. We had to bunt in situations to kind of get guys to move around and try to make things happen. And, that's the fun part of baseball right there, you know. It was a great game. Those two were both competing the whole time. I mean, we were fortunate to get the win, but it was a good game. You know, Greenwich, they have a good ball club down there. and they're gonna get on a roll. You'll see in a little while.
How much? What's it like when you're able to throw three pitchers? I mean, you're set every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, where you got a good pitcher going, and you're not overworking any of your starters.
Yeah, no, I feel good. I mean, having three guys that I know I can put out there in every game, we're going to be competitive. What else could you ask for? I mean, those guys are all going to go out there, give us a chance to win. We don't really kill them on the pitch count. Early in the year, we like to just, keep them under 100. I'd like to keep them at 75 if I can, but Reed was up to like 89, I think, on Friday. So, that was the highest I think we've thrown this year. But as it gets warmer and the season gets a little longer, we'll stretch them out a little longer. But those guys have been great. I mean, and I have, a couple guys that we're trying to figure out in the bullpen. We have, Cooper Hine and Scout Presley, two kids that haven't pitched for us before. So we're, getting them into the mix there a little bit. It's nice to have three guys that we know we can start and, hopefully they can go five or six innings right now and, hopefully complete games as we go. But, it's great to have those guys.
Well, Ken,
quick
great
question, Coach. Sorry, Dave.
No, go ahead, Sean. Yeah, you got something to add?
Pitching-wise, I always struggled with call pitches, suggest pitches, or let the kids call their own. Where do you fall in that spectrum?
Yeah, well, we're kind of in the suggestion rule. I mean, I think we let the catchers kind of figure out and learn how to, coach the game and call the game. That way they get to learn as well on the fly. But there's moments where, as a coaching staff, we're like, all right, we need to throw a certain pitch here. And we'll talk to them and let them know. Some people like to call every pitch. I don't like to call every pitch. We don't want to control it completely like that. But there are times where we'll have to step in and just say, hey, we want to call this pitch. But we kind of let the catchers do the call and let the pitchers make their own calls. They know their best stuff. So it's a little mix of both, but we're definitely not controlling in that sense.
Well, Ken, great start. This keeps up. We're going to find a furniture store to get that recliner in the dugout. But until then, congratulations. Thanks for taking the time here, and I'll see you soon.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Have a good rest of the show, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Ken. That was Fairfield Ludlow coach Ken Gariak. Sean, as we conclude here, I talk about life is like in the FCAC. I'm just looking at I always put possible coverages. I make a schedule up for me. Tomorrow, Ward Trumbull, Norwalk, New Canaan. Wednesday, Staples, Norwalk, Ludlow, New Canaan. Friday, New Canaan, Ward, and Stamford, Staples. Life in the FCAC.
Yeah, and you have great things to look forward to, so that's exciting.
All right, well, let's make sure everybody keeps, those kids keep reading the websites. But, Sean, great baseball segment as always. Thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you. I'll see you next week.
Thank you very much, and congratulations to Jeff on his 700th win.
Thanks. That was Sean Ratchford, and talking about the 700th win, Mr. 700 is going to be joining me on the other side, Darianne Boys lacrosse coach Jeff Braemeyer. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on WICC.
Let's hear what Dave Rudin has to say about this week in high school baseball, softball, and lacrosse. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to make the jump from bats to sticks. And I wish I could say I had the great foresight to schedule my next guest for today. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, but I go back with Jeff Braemeyer longer than anybody in the FCAC. I got my start at a weekly newspaper in Darien, and he was the assistant football coach at the time. Hadn't even started with the lacrosse program. That would come 2 years later, a year and a half later, actually. And yesterday got his 700th win. Only four other high school lacrosse coaches have won more games. Just an incredible run, and joining me right now is Jeff Braemeyer. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Dave? Great to have you on. Thanks. I appreciate it.
No. We could do a whole hour, but we'll do 20 minutes here. First of all, congratulations. You low-key it, but you had to be proud, and it had to be an exciting day for you yesterday.
Yeah, well, I think I alluded to when you texted me early in the morning, to come on. I wasn't sure you knew that was potential, and I said, well, I don't really want to come on unless we take care of business. And yeah, it was a little stressful day. Amerik was a great challenge for us and jumped out on us early, and we were able to fight back and pull out a really good win.
As you said, it takes a village, and you've certainly had a great village, but you're the one who's been the head of that village. And first of all, I don't know how you encapsulate a run like you've had for 42 years and 700 wins, but try to encapsulate it for everybody.
Well, you know, I think it really leads into, you know, what I was passionate about when I made the jump into education. You know, I loved working with kids, found that niche, early on in my summers during college, and flipped to get teaching certification and began coaching immediately after college graduation. So I've been in Darien since 1977 and, started off, as you said, as an assistant football coach. I actually coached girls track for 5 years and girls gymnastics for 5 years at the junior high level before I, got the opportunity to take over the newly found varsity lacrosse program in 1984. So, stranger things happen. I certainly was not a lacrosse guy growing up because we didn't have it. Was kind of hoping for a baseball position to open up, but George Nelson, my head coach when I was at their end, was still there. So, the AD at that time, Mike Hannigan, asked if I'd be interested and thought about it. And, I kind of took the bull by the horns and left it out for a few years there.
Boy, your memory lane for me hearing all those names and my start as a sports writer and, a long run with a bunch of really good head coaches, and you were a head coach of football and went to a state final, and also not bad as a swimming coach with 5 state titles and 5 state runners-up. But let's go back. I want to get to this year's team and give them their due in a bit. Take me back to 1984. Like you said, you didn't have experience lacrosse, a new program. Wilton and New Canaan are sort of the early powers. Take me back in terms of how you set the foundation for what was to come.
Well, I was fortunate that both the kids and myself didn't know a whole lot about lacrosse. So in some ways that was a good thing, and neither did the town. So, nobody was looking over my shoulders and saying, you should be doing that or should be doing this. And I kind of just took the teaching mentality and I had to learn the game and they had to learn the game. And the community came along very shortly thereafter, starting, our youth program, DY Locks, in 1986 with guys like, Lang Clark and Tom Parnon, spearheading that. And, the rest is, sort of history. The first years were a little struggle. We got 2 wins our first year and, a few more our next 2 years. We didn't break the 500 mark until, 4 years in. But from then on, we've been, pretty competitive and, really kind of broke into the big 3 in the early 90s. And 91 was the first time we beat New Canaan. And then 92 was the first time we beat Wilton. So, once we got over that hump, things just really started rolling.
Yeah, not a bad run with 19 FCAC and 14 state titles. How do you learn the game back then? There wasn't any YouTube. There wasn't any internet. How you already have guys like Howard Benedict and Guy Witten in the league. How do you learn the game back then?
Well, I would say that I did a lot of stealing. I was very, very much a student of the game and watched, what was making Wilton so successful and what was making New Canaan. They were both different head coaches and styles and the way they coached. But I learned a great deal from both of them. I really think I took a huge step forward when finally the college coaches really started sharing more very similar to, you know, what the football coaches had always been doing when I was coaching. You know, we could go to, you know, football clinics and, you know, big time college coaches would give you their offense, they give you their defense, and, you know, you kind of pick and choose what you think would work for you. And that's sort of what started to happen on the college level, you know, and I think the guys I learned from the most early were Bill Tierney, you know, when he was having his great run at Princeton, and Dave Cottle. Those two guys really, you know, set a standard of teaching that helped me. And then, you know, every year I'm trying to learn more. You know, I may be an old fart at 72, but I tell the kids, you know, I'm never too old to learn and try something new. And you know, the game keeps changing, too.
Obviously, as we've seen, you know, getting a program back then was easier than now in terms of you have such established powers and you have a lot of good coaches and a lot of good towns who've done a good job of building up their programs, but they're just so far, far behind everyone else. It's hard for them to gain the traction to get up to that level. But was there a certain point where you felt like you were on steady ground and it was sort of like, hey, I got this? Was it when you started beating these teams and then getting your first championships?
I think so. I think once, you know, the late 80s and early 90s, we really started to come. I knew we were getting the athletes because at that point in time, you know, all the, you know, and the majority of the top football players were playing for me. And a lot of top hockey players and kids from, you know, basketball and stuff. So, you know, we did a great job of getting multi-sport athletes in. And you know, Darianne was just competitive in a lot of different sports. So, you know, with the athletes, you know, it made us more competitive. Then we had to develop the, you know, the skill set and the, you know, the knowledge of the game. And that, you know, that's always going to be an ongoing issue of, you know, time on task. And, you know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, we were able to get away with just being superior athletes at times. But then, you know, then we'd, you know, I'd get out coached or we'd get out played because of certain things we didn't have in the early 90s. But I think we got, you know, got past that in the mid 90s. 97 was our first state championship. And you know, that was kind of, you know, the next step. And then, you know, like I said, it just kept going from there.
What was the dynamic like when it was New Canaan and Wilton really kind of ruling the league and you're trying to catch up to them?
I think what was good, I think I alluded to before, there was, you know, not as big an expectation on Darianne because, you know, we were 10 plus years behind, you know, in, you know, startup. So, you know, we were, you know, everybody knew we were playing catch up, but we were catching up. And you know, when 91 hit and 92 hit, you know, it wasn't pressure. It was like, wow, look where they've come in, you know, 7-8 years. And, you know, and like I said, then we were getting the athletes, you know, and we were there. You know, and then we hit the mid-2000s and, you know, we were the team to beat. You know, we had multiple years of, you know, FCAC and state championships, and we had a couple of undefeated seasons early in the, you know, I think it was 2005 was our first undefeated season. You know, and then, you know, so we went on a couple of good runs there. I think we had a, you know, two or three of the longest win streaks in Connecticut history. You know, we had a win streak of 31, then a 34, and then I think, you know, our last one got stopped at 76 or something like that. But, you know, those were fun times, and they still are.
Absolutely. Need to take a quick break here. We're going to come back with Jeff Braymeyer on the other side. You're listening to Bats and Sticks on WICC.
Let's get back to the action. The Rooten Report presents Bats and Sticks, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Jeff, did it become one of those things, too, where you start winning and you get more athletes coming out, and the more you win, the more everybody wants to be part of the program?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there was a combination of that, and certainly as we're as we continue to see it in not just lacrosse but other sports, when kids are having success beyond high school, you know, then there's some aspirations to follow that lead. So we started getting kids to, you know, not only play great high school lacrosse, but go on and play in the college game and you know, get great opportunities to go to great schools for education first, and you know, on top of that, play you know, at the highest level of lacrosse. You know, and I think that that fed into our growth, where you know, the athletes and Jerry Andy, you know, wanted to play a sport that, you know, might help them get into college and that they might be able to play in college. And, you know, it's a difficult time. But, you know, obviously we've seen Jerry and kids in all sports go out there and play at the next level. And that's kind of, you know, another tipping point for our kids, you know, to stay with lacrosse. And, you know, in some ways it's unfortunate because the pressure starts early that, you know, we got to start building for, you know, our college future. But, you know, as I tell the kids all the time, your best experience is always going to be your high school experience. No question about it.
Let's fast forward to the present because there's so much to talk about. First of all, what the dynamic has certainly changed. Lacrosse is the best played sport in the FCAC, and we can go home after this, and we're going to see I don't know how many lacrosse players on television. But now Greenwich, Ridgefield, and most recently Staples have joined that pack. How difficult is it now when you've got to go up against this level of talent and this many good teams?
Yeah, well, I think it's just a sign of the times and the growth of the sport. You know, boys and girls lacrosse has just exploded, you know, not only just in this region, but across the country. And you know, it was only a matter of time, you know, where programs like, like Staples, I mean, obviously they've come on in the last 5 years, you know, with Will doing a great job there. And, you know, Greenwich was always competitive. They were stronger, you know, than Darien was when I first started. But, you know, they are suffering some of the consequences of the private school sector, you know, pillaging their potential of top athletes. Ridgefield, when Roy took over up there, he built a very competitive program, and obviously his sons have contributed to that, you know, being three of the elite lacrosse players of their era. So, you know, it's a challenge, and I think we all, aspire to that. You know, the FCAC did a good thing by going Tier 1 and Tier 2, you know, allowing, to kind of avoid the, the blowout games as much as we could, and allow, you know, teams to play at their own competitive level, which was good for both Tier 1 and the Tier 2 teams to help them, you know, have a competitive game instead of just, non-competitive games where they're either getting, you know, big wins or big blowouts. And that allowed, you know, the Tier 1 schools to go out and play a much more competitive schedule, and that's why I'm able to go out and play the likes of St. Anthony's, Chaminade, Brunswick, you know, Manhasset, Massapequa, you know, Yorktown, et cetera. You know, and we added Fairfield Prep back in the schedule because, you know, we had more open dates. And, you know, I think you see that Staples and New Canaan and Ridgefield have all done the same. You know, done the same.
You led me right into where I wanted to go next with how the landscape's changed and non-league and out-of-state schedules. How's that changed in terms of who you schedule? Like you said, you always, with the program, you're a nationally ranked program, nationally known, and you're playing those kind of teams. Do you kind of assess where you think your talent level is going to be in terms of how difficult the non-league schedule, and what's that do for your team? Because you, every game is a grind for you, whether it's an FCAC team or an out-of-state team.
Yeah, well, there's a good and bad to that. I mean, it's like, I think the good part is that we now have what I would consider traditional rivalries that, you know, some of them date, you know, all the way back to the early 90s with, you know, Yorktown was one of the first elite programs that allowed us to even play them when we started getting competitive. And I was like, that was a, you know, that was a big step for us to be able to go outside of Connecticut and play, you know, one of the elite programs in Westchester County. And then, you know, then we started to, in 96 with the Battle of the Sound and playing Manhasset in Garden City. I look at the Manhasset rivalry game as big as any of our, you know, FCAC games every year. It's a competitive challenge. And I couldn't even tell you. I think we're 50-50 probably in wins and losses against Manhasset through the 30 years that we've been, you know, doing that battle. And then we were, you know, able to pick up, you know, a program like St. Anthony's years back. And that had been very competitive, again, back and forth, you know, wins, losses, tough games. And St. Anthony's has just kind of, you know, gotten, because of a lot of different things, their program has just, you know, gone off the charts with D1 commits. And last time we beat them was 22. So we got to get over the hump this year and see if we can get back into the winning side there. But, you know, that's been a very good competitive schedule. And Chaminade is just like St. Anthony's. Chaminade is St. Anthony's, New Canaan to Darien. So having them on the schedule, you know, that's two great teams. And then, you know, we added Brunswick, and there's good and bad to that because we lose kids from Darien to Brunswick. And, you know, sometimes that's not necessarily a good thing to promote another school that might take some of your players, but you know, they're one of the top programs in the country and you want to go play them.
We only have this time goes by so fast, and I wanted to ask you about FCAC players getting poached real quick. We got a minute. First, this year's team, a couple of good 10-9 wins this week, including number 699 against Walton and coming from behind with a 6-3 deficit
Yeah, well, that was a battle back, and to Wilton's credit, they came out firing, and Connor McAndrews had a career game for him, and really took it to us, you know, with his scoring ability, but we persevered and fought through, that score, and got ourselves in a position to go in overtime, and it was, you know, very, very, very nerve-wracking, and we went through three overtimes to finally have, you know, Bruce Hopkins as a sophomore come in and chip one in with his left hand coming around the cage. So very similar game with Marinette. You know, they started out and jumped on us, got up 5-2 or something, and you know, we had to scrap back. And
hey, Jeff, sorry, I gotta cut you off. This time goes by so fast. I'm going to have you back, I promise, because there's so much we didn't get to. Thanks and congratulations.
No problem. All right, thanks for having me on. Take care.
Bye. Okay, it's Jeff Braemeyer. Bats and Sticks is brought to you by Dutch's Restaurants. Fresh food served fast. A great show. I'm going to get Jeff back on. Have a good week, everybody.